I'm gonna tell you what it is, okay? It's a dumbass white movie about some dumbass white girls getting their white asses cut the fuck up, okay?
Yeah, I suppose Sandra Bullock is Miss Ethnicity, right?
Well, no, all I'm saying is that the horror genre is historical for excluding African American elements.
Well, now how you get your PhD in black cinema, Sister Soldier?
Welcome back to Afro Horror and happy Black History Month. We are celebrating the year anniversaries and we're going to be talking about 1974 Sugar Hill, which is celebrating its 47th year anniversary on February 7th. So we're really excited to talk about this movie today. I'm going to admit I had never seen Sugar Hill except for recently to talk about it for this podcast, and I am completely obsessed. The whole time I was watching the movie, I just kept planning ideas in my head of what I would do for Halloween and tributes I wanted to do for it. It is such a guilty pleasure. It is available on Amazon Prime for $3.99 to rent if you want to check it out. It's very much different from the Spike Lee Sugar Hill. That's a completely different movie. So if you're thinking, oh, I'll just watch the remake, it's no, that doesn't exist. Watch 1974 Sugar Hill. And I have a really special guest today, who I'm super excited to have join us for the conversation. But before I introduce him, I want to remind you all that in honor of Black History Month, and we are Afro Horror Podcast, we have some really great limited edition items in our shop dedicated to Black History Month, as well as some Clubhouse exclusives. If you are on Clubhouse, we're on Afro Horror Club on Clubhouse. And we had our Scream franchise chat room this past weekend, and we had a free Cotton Weary t-shirt available with the code Clubhouse10 on it. And for all the podcast listeners, I am extending that offer to you. So if you go on our website right now, www.afrohorror.com, go to our shop, there is a free Cotton Weary t-shirt available in the shop. And if you use the code Clubhouse10, you'll save 10% off. That shirt won't be here much longer because every week we add new merchandise items to fit to our Clubhouse room. And for the podcast, you will see a Sugar Hill shirt in the shop as well. So if you use the code AfroHorror10, you can get 10% off of anything in the store, but specifically you'll see a nod to Sugar Hill in our shop tomorrow. I'm not going to let you know what that shirt says until tomorrow when the episode drops, so just go to our Instagram and you'll see it there. But we're super excited about that. Again, this is the season 3, so we're doing the year of anniversary. So every month our episode will cover a movie that is celebrating an anniversary during that month. So that's why you pick Sugar Hill for February. And we have guest hosts every month this year. We have people I've met online or on Clubhouse who are guesting with us every month. And I'm super excited. We have a really great year coming up. But enough about that. With further ado, I want to introduce our guest for the Sugar Hill episode, Mr. Evan J. Peterson.
Hey, Sharday. It's great to be here.
Hi, Evan. How are you?
You know, believe it or not, I'm doing well.
Are you doing well, sugar?
I'm sweet. I'm well. Yeah, I'm good and good at it.
I feel like we should just talk in Black exploitation speak the whole time. Like,
you is that turkey. Okay? You know, I try not to do that as a white person, but you know, it's your show. If you want me to talk like that, I can talk like that.
Maybe it's best. You're absolutely right. So Evan, please introduce everyone. Who are you? What do you do? Where can we find you? Let us know.
So I'm an author. And I write a lot of different types of things. I get a lot of work in humor and lighter genres, but I also write quite a bit of horror. So you can find me at evanjpeterson.com or on Twitter at evanjpeterson. And through my site, you can usually find what kinds of classes I'm teaching online, what kinds of workshops, where you can read stuff that's coming out and getting published. But yeah, what else do I do? I mean, I do all kinds of stuff. I was the producer and host of Shriek, Women of Horror Cinema in Seattle, but that project is complete. Mm. But Yeah, I like to pull that out as a little street cred now and then.
You're based in Seattle?
I am.
I freaking love Seattle.
You know, it ain't too bad, is it?
I went to Seattle for a weekend just on the spur of the moment when my cousin Toya lived there like 4 years ago. And she took me to do all the touristy things. I went to the fish market and they threw fish at me. And I was like, this is great. We went to see an improv play that was like by the gum wall. There's some theater that was by the gum wall. Yep.
Oh yeah.
I drank Starbucks coffee, like the original Starbucks coffee. And it rained the whole time and I loved it, but I didn't come prepared with an umbrella. And actually my cousin was like, no one uses umbrellas out here because the wind is so strong. You look like an idiot. And she was right. I bought an umbrella and I just couldn't get it together. And I looked like an idiot. So I just wore a hat for the entire time. I love Seattle. Those are my people.
Did you catch the Museum of Pop Culture while you were out here?
Yes.
Oh, that is one of my happy places.
We danced in the middle of, they have this room that's just like a giant screen.
And the Sky Church.
Yes, we danced to Maroon 5 Sugar. Oh my God, oh my God.
There are no coincidences, Sade.
There's no coincidence, this is meant to happen. Me and my cousin Toya danced to Maroon 5 Sugar in this middle of this room with a bunch of kids and it was so fun. Like, I have only the best memory of Seattle. Yes, I did and I went to the needle.
Mm-hmm.
The needle? I don't know what it is, but I went up there.
The Space Needle.
Beautiful. Your city is beautiful, and it's full of books and water, and and people are kind. They were kind, at least they were kind to me. I don't know if they're, you know, I got the tourist experience.
We're very polite here in general.
I love it.
Yeah.
Not a lot of Black people, I will say.
No. Definitely a lot more Asian Americans than African Americans.
Yeah.
And depending on what neighborhood you're in, interestingly enough, there are more immigrants from Africa than African Americans born here.
Interesting. I wonder, you know, it's always funny. My mom is an immigrant from Belize and she immigrated from Belize to LA. She grew up here in LA, but then she settled on Lansing, Michigan, where I wasn't born there, but that's where I grew up. And there's a big Belizean population there. I'm like, it must be something about the opposite weather attracts. Like you grew up in this hot, humid temperature your whole life. And now you're like, I just want to be cold. I never understood it. Actually, my freshman year at Michigan State, my roommate, she was from the Bay Area here in California. And I grew up in Michigan. And I was like, why the hell would a California girl want to come out here to Michigan? And it was true. She like was sick of the big city and she wanted to try small town stuff. And it's not that glamorous, y'all.
And I grew up in Miami. So, you know, much love to Miami, but I hate hurricanes. They're awful. You know? Oh, can I cuss on your show?
Of course. We curse all the time. We're the most inappropriate podcasts out there, trust me. You know what, since you're from Miami, we are going to be taping our Patreon episode after this. Maybe we should do Crawl.
We could. I haven't seen Crawl yet.
Well, then we can't do it, but it's all about a hurricane, so like we can't do it, but I don't know. We'll save the surprise for the Patreon listeners and what we're gonna choose.
I have it narrowed down to an older movie and a newer movie.
Wonderful.
Which are some of the best I've seen recently.
Wonderful. Well, I always ask this question because my dog wants to be a part of this. Say hello, Mejan. No one can see you, but they can hear you.
Oh, this hello, is my dog. Cutie.
Yeah, he's all black with a little white fur patch in the middle. And we've been quarantined together for now a full year and he won't leave me alone, literally. I can't go pee without him up my asshole. So,
you know, some people pay for that.
Yeah. I don't want that from him particularly. Mm-hmm. I'll take like a Chris Evans, sure.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, boundaries.
Yeah. I would like a human interaction with my ass. It's been a year of quarantine. I apologize. Yeah.
The wind is like whistling through.
Yeah, I mean, even like watching Sugar Hill or just rewatching some movies, I'm just like, look at that man.
The actor's name isn't coming to me, but the guy who played Baron Samedi, he is fucking hot.
Yeah, really hot. Like, and I'm just watching them all, and I'm like, look at this, the mustache and the hair. I'm like, it's been a long time. but I want to ask, like, so we obviously posted our show list on our Instagram, and we allowed people to DM us and pick whatever they wanted. Remind me, did you have a different movie picked, or did you just automatically pick Sugar Hill?
Sugar Hill was definitely my number one. I said that I would also do Ganja and Hess.
Right.
Because that one is just amazing. But yeah, Sugar Hill is my top pick.
Why did you pick Sugar Hill? I'm so curious.
You know, sometimes, like, you can't explain it, but something just hits you just right. And I saw Sugar Hill for the first time last year on Shudder, and then I went and watched it two more times because it was so good. And I just can't explain why I love Sugar Hill so much. But I think part of it is, you know, that it's a strong story. Mm-hmm. And it's not that predictable. I love that ending when, yes, Baron Samedi is ready to collect a soul. But also just like the deaths are all different.
Yep.
And there's magic, but there's also good old fashioned gore, and yeah.
No, I agree with you, especially about the story. It's such a strong story. I was like, man, 1974. And honestly, we'll get into it. Sugar Hill made me look at Kill Bill a little differently. I was like, did Quentin Tarantino steal the storyline? Or not steal it, but was he inspired by it? Did he say that? Was he inspired by it?
I mean, he steals everything. So, you know, I wouldn't
be surprised. The storylines are similar with, you know, a soon-to-be bride and her lover is killed. And she takes them down one by one, domino style, you know, until she gets to the main boss at the end. It's a very similar story, except for without all of the mysticism and horror out of it, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just, and I know Quentin is a fan of Black exploitation films because he loves using the N-word in all of his scripts. So I'm wondering if that's what inspired him.
And my favorite Tarantino still is Jackie Brown.
Jackie Brown, exactly.
So good. So good.
He's a fan. I don't know how I feel about him using the N-word so much in his work, but that's for a different day. Back to Sugar Hill. I'm glad you picked it. I know you were a little apprehensive. You're like, is a white guy going to be able to talk about Sugar Hill? And I was like, absolutely. Like, I would love to talk to a white guy about Sugar Hill. So here we are. We're talking about Sugar Hill. So thank you for being on the show. Let's get to it, people. All right. So 1974 Sugar Hill, very different from the Sugar Hill that Spike Lee made in like 2000 something. Not related at all. I mean, I at least think, right? I've never seen the Spike Lee's Sugar Hill.
Neither have I. Although,
but
interestingly enough,
I read the plot, and it's nothing like this movie.
No, it's like a cop procedural.
Yeah, you know,
it's more like The Wire or something.
Yeah, so I need to do more research. I'm like, why did he name it Sugar Hill?
And what's really interesting to me is that he remade Ganja and Hess.
Yeah,
but under a different name.
Exactly.
So, yeah. Who knows?
Anyway, well, when we get to Ganja and Hess, we will dig up the rest of those Spike Lee facts. But Sugar Hill is directed by Paul Malansky, and it was produced by Elliot Schick. I think that's right. And written by Tim Kelly. All white dudes. Like white men.
Yeah, pretty par for the course with blaxploitation.
Yeah. I mean, it was problematic to also... I think, okay, so I want to ask you this question, Evan.
Mm-hmm.
You referred to it as magic, but I'm not, you know, I'm agnostic, so I'm like out of everything. I just don't, you know, I'm just in the middle. But a lot of my friends who are priestesses or, see, it's different because in white culture, it's magic, it's witch. But in Black culture, especially like Southern Black, very French inspired Creole culture, it's voodoo and it's not witches. It's, I don't want to say the wrong thing. What I'm basically saying is that topic of religion, because voodoo is a religion,
right?
It's so sensitive because the people who practice that religion, it's always been captured wrong throughout film history. And I was thinking in my head, like, I would really love to see a Sugar Hill remake, but I don't even know if you could do it anymore because, you know, voodoo is such a sacred thing to so many people. You know, you almost don't want to exploit that. What do you think a Sugar Hill remake would look like for 2021?
I mean, first of all, it should be made by Black people.
Well, yes, yes, absolutely.
So, you know, right there. And people who've done their research on voodoo, maybe Haitian versus Louisiana versus West African. So yeah. Just, you know, getting a better understanding of what it is, how it's done. Yeah, I mean, I could totally see Jordan Peele producing a remake of Sugar Hill, and I would watch the fuck out of that. Yeah.
I was thinking about it as I was watching the movie. I love the idea that this woman, because there's a beautiful line that Mama, what is her name?
Mama Maitresse.
Yes, Mama Maitresse. Such a Creole, French Creole, is so beautiful to me. And that whole, that's so, the rich, first of all, the setting is so rich, that deep South, like, bayou setting, very True Blood-ish. I love it. It's so full of culture. It's so rich. But there's a beautiful line where she's asking Diana, which is my middle name, by the way, so I also felt a kinship. And I was like, yeah, because Diana's are bad bitches. And Wonder Woman's, her name is also Diana. So I was like, hey, Diana's. And, you know, Dirty Diana. We're very popular.
Diana Ross.
Diana Ross. Thank you. We're very, very popular. Princess Diana.
Yes, so, princess of the people.
But there's a line where Mama's talking to Diana and she goes, how deep is your hate? And Diana goes, as strong as my love was, my hate is deeper. And I was like, ooh, there's something really great about, like, hell hath no fury, like a woman scorned.
Yes.
That I would love to see this remake would really, like, in Sugar Hill, in the original, Diana, even though she's full of hate and vitriol and wants revenge, she keeps her cool. She's very calm, collected. Mm-hmm. She's like a simmering hate. I would love to see, like, a really big, bad horror woman, Black woman villain who's just like, I'm enraged because you made me this way, because you've taken everything away from me, and I'm going to, like, almost like Carrie, you know, like, yeah. Carrie at the prom.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I'm going to kill everyone. And I also, my version of the remake is that Diana, while she sets her sights out obviously for her lover's killers, she's so consumed by hate that now it just becomes everyone. It's not just about, like, you know, remember Huntress from what's the movie with Deadshot in them?
Birds of Prey?
Yeah, no, not Birds of Prey. The one before that. So it was Harley Quinn.
Suicide Squad?
Suicide Squad. Remember Huntress, where it's just like, she's so consumed. It started out as a good thing, but Huntress literally consumes her with all this evil and hate. It turns into, like, I'm gonna end the world rather than I'm gonna save my lover. That's the kind of angle I would like.
I could see that, but I think one of the things that I love about this movie is that Diana she's never punished for going too far. Mm-hmm. And she never does bring innocent people into it.
That's true.
Maybe the gangster's girlfriend, but she's a hateful piece of shit. So I'm I'm not mad about it that she has to suffer too.
Well, it's interesting because in Candyman, it's kind of the same storyline, which I wonder, like, I know Clive Barker wasn't inspired by this movie, but I wonder if the director was, since he went astray from Clive Barker's original short story and he kind of landed on Candyman. Where Candyman, like, he was murdered and he was separated from his lover and their unborn child. And he took it out on everyone who lived in Cabrini Green, like, Black or white. He just took it out on that area. It never became about, like, I'm going to avenge the people that actually killed me. It was like, generations will suffer for my hate.
Right.
And I do enjoy that, although I do disagree that Candyman should be taking out his anger on, like, the innocent Black people in the projects, which I know they were going to fix in the remake. But for Diana, I mean, because at the end of the movie, I kind of looked at her on the screen. I was like, what are we going to do now, girl? Like, mission accomplished. Like, are you done?
Yeah.
Or should we go get some more people? Like, let's go get all the bad people, you know? Yeah. So I kind of want a movie like that where maybe the midpoint is, yeah, she accomplishes her goal, but then the rest of the movie is like, but there's more people to be had. Yeah. I'm going to keep going.
Yeah, I have my definite like headcanon for a remake, and you know, like who I would pick to play the different parts.
Let's do this. Let's do our cast.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I was thinking that Sugar herself, Diana Hill, I would probably cast Letitia Wright.
Okay, you were going younger. We're going to scale her back.
I guess. I mean, you know, she's probably around 30 in the original.
That's true. And you know what? It's so funny you say that, because Letitia, I always imagine her as like 16, 17 because of Zuri, but she is my age.
Because of Shuri.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I love when people who have been in the original or in the original genre are cast again.
Yes.
You know, like seeing Jessica Harper in the remake of Suspiria, and seeing who played the Wonder Woman on TV?
Oh, Linda.
Yeah. Yes. Linda Carter.
Carter.
Carter. Having her do that cameo in the stinger after the credits for Wonder Woman 84. So I would definitely want to see Pam Grier as Mama Maitresse.
Yes.
Because Pam is 70 and, you know, she looks amazing, but she's the right age to be playing an old griot like that.
Right.
And I think she'd bring more to it than just old witchy lady.
I think it would be nice. It'd be a nice nod. Also, I think, is Marky Key, is she alive? She's alive, right? Marky Bay, I mean.
Marky Bay. I don't
know. She plays Diana.
Mm-hmm. According to IMDb, yes, Marky Bay is still alive.
She might be fun, too, for Mama.
Yeah.
Oh, she's 73. Yeah,
absolutely.
She's 73 years old.
Okay.
She might come back as well. Okay, go continue.
Yeah, why not? And then for Baron Samedi, I think like it's either, for me, it's either Keith David or Ken Foree.
Yeah, oh, Ken Foree would be so cool because he's so tall and just like intimidating. Yeah.
Well, and Ken Foree has those gigantic eyes.
Yes. He's also very sweet, so I know he could play evil very bad.
Yeah. And this, I mean, even though this Baron Samedi is I mean, he's a trickster type character in the original, right? But I find it hard to dislike him.
I like this cast. This is a solid cast. And then what about the white guy? What is his name? It starts with an M. Let me find it. Sorry, guys. Not on
Morgan?
My music. Morgan, yeah. What about Morgan?
You know, I didn't really care about the white characters enough to recast them, but for Morgan, it would be, you know, it'd be someone who's usually in that gangstery type of role. You know, maybe someone like a Nick Nolte or...
Ooh.
Yeah, someone like that.
Oh, yes. Okay, I love that. Here's my recast of Sugar Hill 1974. Mm-hmm. I would have an unknown actress as Diana to let introduce a new person. I would have Angela Bassett as Mama.
Okay.
Yeah. Give my girl, you know, some more. And I would have Samuel L. Jackson as Baron.
Okay.
So he can just say motherfucker one time. And I can just, you know, check off my list. And then I would have James Van Der Beek as Morgan, just because I feel like.
Oh my God.
I just want to see James Van Der Beek just be an evil guy. I think, and that's it. That would be my cast.
Okay. All right.
Yay. Okay. So let's talk about some details of the movie real quick, y'all. So Sugar Hill, I already told you the director and the writer, starring Marky Bay, Robert Quarry, and Don Pedro Coley. Cinematography by Robert Jessup and edited by Carl Kress. Released on February 4th, 1974 by American International Productions through MGM. So MGM currently owns the rights to this. So I mean, if you guys are listening, let's all write letters to MGM and say, open up that IP vault and let a Sugar Hill remake come through. It was 91 minutes. It was a budget of $350,000. That's dope. It's a lot of money for that time, but for what they did, honestly, it looks good.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not mad at it at all. Let's talk about the zombies. I like the zombies. I mean, yeah.
Me too.
The webbing is fake, right?
Yeah.
It's a little Party City. But the eyes, I really love the eyes and the zombies.
Mm-hmm. And it looked like the zombies were slaves. Like, I don't remember if that was explicitly called out in the film, but, you know, they are definitely dressed as people who were, you know, owned on a plantation.
Yeah, so it is, it's not like spelled out, but it's mentioned in multiple parts, especially by the detective. So the land that Diana's property and her family's property falls on was old slave plantations, and they like an old graveyard for slaves, especially slaves who got sick. So that's why, like, at the first crime scene, they find a shackle, which is like, okay. Mm-hmm. it's all, I mean, look, it's 1974. It's a Black exploitation film, so we're not going to get too critical of it. But, you know, it's 1974, and slavery ended hundreds of years ago, and yet the slaves are, like, fully intact with their clothing and their skin and everything. So, like, all right. But
I mean, magic.
It's magic. And it tended to be, like, what I really love, the message of Sugar Hill, is like, we call on our ancestors for help. Mm-hmm. And so it's basically all of her enslaved ancestors coming up from the ground to like punish this white man for killing her lover. So that's really fun. I don't know if we could ever make that in 2021, but I feel like we could do some sort of something to it. Because in mythology, there are, not just in African mythology, but in Asian mythology, I want to say in Greek as well, there are goddesses who control the dead. Like, that's a real, like, that's a thing.
Yeah.
I don't know what their exact names are, but I've read about them before. So I would love to see a more updated version just about, you know, the high priestess who controls dead people.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. And get more into the Orishas and the Loa and stuff like that.
And get loud. And let's dive deep into it and make it a franchise. Let's get a spin out. Let's get 2, 3. I wouldn't call it Sugar Hill. I would call it Diana. That's just why.
Yeah, I could see that.
Just because I my middle is Diana, and I want to have a movie named after me. That's all.
Well, and I think the time is right to remake a lot of these Blaxploitation films because we know enough now to do it differently. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Black people have a lot more agency in Hollywood than, you know, they even did 10 years ago.
Yep.
Ain't perfect yet, for sure.
No.
But
I agree. But, we get a Black director, a Black writer, we got something cooking here.
Yeah. And like, I would love to see a remake of Abby.
Oh, yes.
Oh, that would be amazing.
We have so many. I know everyone's like, oh, remakes, why can't we do originals? But honestly, if you work in the industry, as I do, I tell you guys this all the time. IP, it's like if I paid for an expensive dinner with you, Evan. Like I dropped $2 million on a dinner with you. And we just ate the food and that's it? It just sits there? No. What if I paid $2 million and had dinner with you and I get to every 5 years regurgitate up the food and we can enjoy the meal again?
You're speaking my language.
Yeah. Wouldn't we do that? Yes. So it's kind of like the meal that you paid for that you keep in like getting a reinvestment in, because every certain time period goes by and you can just do something with it. So that's why people like IP, because they paid for these projects and they need to drain it until the money is gone. So MGM has this piece of IP and haven't done anything with it in 47 years. I'm telling you, MGM, you got 3 years until the 50th anniversary to put together a movie, and it would do so well.
Well, and what if we got like a Blaxploitation MCU where you end up having like Diana Hill and Abby and Prince Blackula,
yes,
all these different iconic Blaxploitation characters all on the same team.
Yes. Like,
I would love that.
That would be, okay, who's listening? We're giving away free gems at the podcast here. That would be dope. And someone should definitely do it. So in the spirit of Black History Month, I'm putting it into the universe with my ancestors behind me to guide that we will get a Sugar Hill remake. Shall I be a part of it? I don't know. I'm just putting it out there right now. So Wikipedia doesn't do the plot summary justice. It's only a paragraph, but that's okay. I'm still gonna read it anyway. And then we're gonna talk about it a little more. So here's the plot summary, according to Wikipedia, for Sugar Hill. The story centers on Diana, aka Sugar Hill, a photographer in Houston. Oh, wait a second. Hold on, let me reread the sentence. The story centers on Diana Sugar Hill Bay, is in parentheses. What did I miss about the Bay?
Just the actor's last name.
Oh, you know why that? You know why that got me? Because Beyonce's from Houston. I was like, oh my God, is this where Beyonce got her name? I had a freak out moment because I wasn't connecting Marky's last name to it. I was like, is this another nickname that I miss? And did Beyonce get her name from Sugar Hill? So sorry guys, I messed up. Anyway, a photographer based in Houston whose boyfriend, nightclub owner Langston, played by Larry D. Johnson, has been killed by a mob boss, Morgan, Robert Query, and his men when he refused to sell the club to Morgan. Sugar seeks the help of a former voodoo queen named Mama Matrice, Zara Cully, to take revenge on Morgan and his thugs. Mama summons the voodoo lord of the dead, Baron, played by Don Pedro Cully, who enlists an army of zombies to destroy the men who killed Langston and now want the club. Investigating the killings is Sugar Mama's former boyfriend. Here comes the Beyonce connection. Police Lieutenant Valentine, who is played by Beyonce's stepdaddy, Richard Lawson. I'm sorry.
I did not know that he was her stepfather.
Yes, here we go. Now we're talking. Okay. Now we're really into Afro horror because I'm also a Beehive member. Beyonce's mommy, Mama Tina Knowles Lawson, I put respect on her new name, got divorced, remarried Richard Lawson, who also has a daughter named Bianca Lawson, who also is currently in Queen Sugar. Look at this. Look how it works. Look at God work. She's currently starring on Queen Sugar, and you could also see her in Pretty Little Liars. She's also on a couple episodes of Buffy as the only Black vampire or slayer that we got. So she is okay. Beyonce's stepsister.
Okay.
So Beyonce is cemented in Hollywood royalty now, darling. Forever. And well, she always has been, but.
And you know, why not have Beyonce play Diana Hill?
Come on, now we're cooking. We could Beyonce as Diana, then we could have obviously our other players playing the other characters, but and then Richard can come back as Baron.
Okay.
Now we've got a movie.
Now we do.
You're welcome, MGM. We just cast that whole thing for you. Set it up, knocked it out of the park, gave you a universe. Just put our names on producers and let us collect our check. Richard Lawson. You know, funny story too. I'm so close to Beyonce. Evan, let me tell you, I'm so close. I'm like 2 degrees away from Beyonce.
Tell me about it.
Okay. Shortly before my writing and producing career, I was an actor. And if you have children, you probably saw me on some Disney and Nickelodeon shows like 10 years ago that might still be in reruns now. So Richard Lawson opened up a acting class or acting school in LA, and you could audit the class for free. So I grabbed my girlfriend, Adrian. Hey, Adrian. And I said, let's go take Richard Lawson's class. Like maybe we could touch him, and then we've touched Beyonce. But also we were actors and we wanted to like just try out the class. Richard is a textual actor, like thespian, like very theater based trained as well. So the class was like 4 hours long, well, 6 hours long, which is normal for acting class. Well, okay, let me take it back. It's not normal. Acting classes are long. Richard's felt longer because he's very loquacious. He can talk. He's saying a lot of great things, but I just remember it was a lot of words, and there's a lot, like I remember the day we audited, only one group scene partner got to go up, and they were like five scene partners. that were slated to go up because he had so many notes for this one scene group. Long story short, at the end of the acting session at Richard's school, you get on stage and you kind of like relax to music and you do a little dance, and he played Jay-Z. And I was like, oh my gosh, we're dancing with Richard Lawson to his brother and his son-in-law's music. I didn't come back to the class because, one, it was a little more expensive than I was used to paying. And two, I wasn't into so much scene study at the time. I wanted to learn how to audition, like for TV and film. So I ended up going to a different studio that taught specifically how to audition and not so much scene study. But I will say he's very kind, and he's also very tall. He's like 6 foot tall, and he was very sweet to us, to Adrian and I. And I think he's a fantastic actor, and obviously he is a kind human being. So that's my Richard Lawson story. Do you have any Beyonce stories? 2 degrees of Beyonce?
I'm old enough that Destiny's Child played Grad Night when I was a senior in high school.
Wait, what? That you performed at your school?
No, no, Grad Night, like at Disney World.
Oh, okay, I'm not from, we don't do that in Michigan. I'm not from California. We don't have a Disney World to go to. Okay.
Yeah.
So they played at Grad Night at Disney Land.
Yes, not just Beyonce, but Destiny's Child.
Right, okay, so for all of you people-
Disney World, Florida.
All of you people outside of Florida and California, Evan, explain to them what is Grad Night, because it's a thing that doesn't exist for the Midwest kids.
Okay. Okay, so Grad Night is basically just, I think it's later in senior year. It's definitely before prom and graduation, but not too long before. Mm-hmm. And all the seniors pile into these buses, and the buses take you to Disney World, and then you ride the rides, but there's also live entertainment. And it's, at least when I was coming up, it was always big names. So, you know, you're not going to see whatever little rinky-dink business Disney label band is trying to get a foothold. It's going to be someone big.
Wait, so it's not just your school. How many other schools are also at Grad Night?
Oh, a lot.
Yeah.
A lot.
All this, and apparently, is it seniors, though?
Yeah, it's okay, Grad Night is for seniors.
For seniors,
and,
okay.
You know, people, I mean, I'm Florida trash, so I can talk about it. You know, Florida is, like, everything you've heard about Florida, Chardet, is true.
Oh, and
you know. So, you know, it was very traditional for people to take LSD on Grad Night.
Oh, like, wow.
This is a Florida tradition.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Were you watching Destiny's Child on LSD?
I was not.
Okay.
I did not go to Grad Night for a few reasons. Hmm. Because I was going to go to Gay Day at Disney, which is usually, I think, last Saturday or last weekend in June.
Okay.
I was going to go to Gay Day with my LGBT youth group.
Okay.
So I was waiting on that. And then I had this big conflict with my mother, and I was not allowed to go, even though I was legally an adult, blah, 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 blah. It was sad.
So you not only missed Destiny's Child, you also missed Gay Day.
I did. But then I went for like years in a row when I was in college.
Right. Like on your own dime. Do you have to pay for Grad Night?
Yes. Yeah.
How much was it? How much was
it? Oh, I don't remember.
Okay. I was going to say like it's $500. Like who has that kind of money? They go to Disneyland.
I mean, suburban Floridians.
That's true. We don't have that here. And I grew up in Michigan. I graduated from Eastern High School, go Quakers. And yeah. And we like the closest thing we have is Six Flags, and that's still even like a 4-hour drive.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We had a good time at Six Flags for senior day.
So something I found out, you know, I was raised by wolves, so I did not have much religion in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And but something I found out after I went to college and started like living next door to people who were devout and stuff like that. Apparently, like, I didn't know this, but Disney has other big nights like that. And one of them is Night of, yes, they have Night of Joy. And all these church groups go and they listen to Christian performers and ride the rides and stuff. So I was like, well, I'll be.
honestly sounds like my worst nightmare. I'm sure that's fun for someone else, but
I mean, I would much prefer Destiny's Child to, you know, Jars of Clay.
Yeah, no judgment. If that's your jam, that sounds like my worst nightmare. But I will say, as an adult before pandemic, there's no better feeling than being an adult with your own money at Disneyland.
Yeah.
Buying alcohol and all the gifts and toys I wanted.
Ooh, yes.
And the corn dog.
Mm.
Have you tried do they have corn dogs at Disney World?
They must. They've got everything. Yeah.
We'll talk about this for a second and then we'll go back to Conjuring House. We'll go back to Sugar Hill. But I'm putting you all on game. When the world opens back up and you come to Disneyland, particularly, because I don't know anything about Disney World, but Disneyland in particular, you go through the front main gates at the main Disney Hall, straight down the path, you'll have Cinderella's castle in front of you to your right, right before you get to the center square where all the different lands are divided, is a little carousel called hand-dipped corn dogs. Mm. Everyone who knows me knows whenever I'm going to Disneyland, we make that stop first. I don't care if it's 8 a.m. in the morning. I don't care. We are stopping so I can get my hand-dipped corn dog. I get one when I get to the park, and before I leave the park, I get my other one. It's the best thing in the world. You can either get apples and chips. I always suggest get the apples because chips and a corn dog just sounds like arteries clogged to me. Apples or chips, and it comes with a drink as well. It's literally like $25, but it's worth it. It's delicious.
Okay.
Everyone who knows me knows that. So that's just a little tip. If you ever get back to Disneyland, people, you can make sure you hit up that corn dog station and let me know about it, because I mean, if we ever get back, I can't wait to get my vaccine because the first place I'm going is Disneyland.
Yep, come for the vaccines, stay for the corn dogs.
Stay for the corn dogs. Back to Sugar Hill.
So transitioning back, I was thinking, so you took that class.
I did.
So you were in Richard Lawson's class. Richard Lawson is Beyonce's stepdad.
Yeah.
Like, email Richard Lawson and tell him, oh my God, can we please make a remake of Sugar Hill happen?
Because
you know, you've worked for Disney, you know, and Disney owns MGM.
Yeah, I really should. I can connect it all back. I could say, I was in your acting class and then I watched Sugar Hill and we should do this and you could be Baron and you could produce it and Beyonce could be in it and we could have a soundtrack and we could have costumes. I wouldn't email him because he doesn't handle like his acting emails, but he's super active on Instagram and so is his wife Mama Tina Knowles, and oh my God, Mama Tina, we call her Mama Knowles. What if she paid mama, what if we just made it a family affair?
Oh my god,
it's amazing. She's right. She could do it. She's fabulous too. In my remake, Mama's fabulous. She's garmed out and she's got headbands and tresses and jewelry, and she smokes only the long French cigarettes and she has beignets for breakfast. Oh, I'm hungry. Yeah.
You're making me picture her like Erica Badu, but I think Badu is still too young to play Mama Maitress.
Yeah. I'm thinking more like a black version of Norma Desmond.
Oh, God, yeah.
Ready for my close-up, Mr. DeVille.
Okay.
You know, or like, I'm ready to steal some white souls, Baron. Right. You know, that's like that.
Yeah. Like someone who's actually used her magic to live deliciously.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. Like, that's how you know she's the real deal, because she's flawless. She hasn't aged. And because in the movie, it says, you know, at the end of the Sugar Hill, Diana goes, Mama, you can rest now. And then the detective does make a comment like, she's pretty sprightly for 100. That's because she's a witch. Like,
yeah.
If I was going to be a witch, would I use my powers for good? No, I would use my powers to stay youthful and slim. Absolutely.
Yes.
That's what I would do. All the beauty regimens out the window. I would never do anything. I'd just be like, caked in the souls of children's blood to make sure I'm beautiful. I'm Winifred, always. So Mama Tina could be a glamorous mama. Oh my gosh. So I plan on doing that. So we have Richard Lawson, like I said there. Oh wait, that was the whole plot summary. Let's just go back. So we open the movie And Diana's at the club with her soon-to-be husband, fiance, Langston. He's very tall. He's very dapper. You can tell there's a love there. The one critique I have about this movie, which if I were to remake it, I would fix it, is that we didn't get enough time with Langston and Diana to really solidify this love. He dies in the second scene he's in.
As a viewer, I cared that he was murdered. Mm-hmm. But I didn't care about the character.
Yeah. All right. And I couldn't feel her love for him because I'm like, girl, he's only been in two scenes. You're hot. Go find another one. You look good, mama. So if I were to remake the movie as the writer director, I would at least let 15 minutes go by so we can build this foundation of what their life was together and what it could have been before it got derailed. So Langston dies and it's so funny. It's 1974. So his beatdown is just like a bunch of guys hovering over his body without trying to hurt the actor. And it's just like, I'm just like, oh yeah, he's getting his ass kicked, but it's like, you know, it's slow motion, like, oh yeah, it's funny. It's pretty funny. So Langston dies in his beautiful powder blue suit and Diana's devastated. But first of all, she's wearing a beautiful emerald green dress, one shoulder with a matching headband. I was like, fabulous, fabulous. If you're gonna hold your dead fiance in your hand, you might as well look good doing it. So the outfits in this whole thing, honestly, I will say, even the racist outfits were glorious.
Yes.
Can we bring that style back? Like, let's bring back when people dressed up and they went out to have a glass of champagne at the nightclub.
You know, I think when we finally get out of COVID land, I mean, for me, it was great to be in pajamas for an entire year.
Yeah.
And now I'm ready to wear some nice fucking clothes. I'm ready to put my contacts in again, you know, get a nice haircut, put on my good clothes, and, you know, go out and find me some dick.
Me too.
Right? You know, okay, I'm just.
Here's my pitch. Here's my remake pitch. I don't want to go out to find me some dick, but if I could be like Diana and summon me some dick.
Oh yeah.
I would do that in a heartbeat.
Like draw your chalk circle.
Yeah, just like bring the dick. Like,
right, sprinkle the cornmeal.
I would sing like, come little children. You know, I'd throw some Hocus Pocus in there. And then I'd just be at home fabulous. And then they would be like zombified dicks. So they would like, wouldn't ask me for anything. They wouldn't ask me to do anything. I could just lay there. And they would feed me grapes and champagne.
Mm-hmm.
I'm bougie as fuck. And maybe a little cheese board, a little charcuterie.
Oh yeah.
And then the spell would break and they would go home and they would have no memory of me. Cause I don't want them to, cause when I'm done with them, I'm really done with them. I don't want repeaters. I don't like leftovers. We're good.
See, I'm looking for my special repeater.
No, that's too complicated. I want you in and I want you out. That would be the dream. That's the real remake of Sugar Hill. Just like she summons dick when she needs it, when she wants it. And it comes and it's gone. And it's like, ooh, that's done. This is a fun episode. Happy Black History Month.
Happy Black History Month. And happy Women in Horror Month.
It is. It's Women in Horror Month. Thank you. We've got a few shout outs from a couple of people shouting out the podcast. So if you guys are new listeners because you saw some shout outs on other people's Instagram, then that's awesome. Women in Horror Month. We might have to do our Patreon episode with one of your films and celebrate some women.
I think that could be arranged.
Yeah, like we could talk about some our scream queens from over time and for 10 minutes. So we'll see. Yes, so it opens like that, and then Diana, to her credit, I love a woman with a plan, especially like a 50-point plan. I love a woman who's organized. Like this is the most organized execution I've ever seen in my life. She had a business market plan. She sought investors. She delivered. A businesswoman.
Yeah.
She didn't waste any time. She went straight to mama. She said, hey, my dude's dead. They killed my man. I need help. And Mama said, okay, let's go to Baron. He's like, you know, it's gonna cost you a soul. She's like, I mean, all right, we can negotiate that, but like, let's get this done first. And she got straight to it. She started out and she zoomed in. So everyone surrounding Morgan, which I love, which again, is very Kill Bill, right? Like the bride didn't go straight for Bill. She didn't know where Bill was anyway, but also she started out with like his posse, the people who were there. So, you know, she kills the Cobra Girl and, I can't remember names right now, but she's, you know, Bill knows she's coming. So it heightens the fear. Also, they did the same thing in Twilight. Now, I feel like Twilight ripped that off from Kill Bill with Rosalie's storyline.
I've never seen Twilight.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, I think that's a pretty old story. Like you start at the bottom of the ladder of people who done fucked you over, and you kill them on the way up until you get to
the final mastermind. Boss.
Yes. Yes.
There's a line, I love this line. Sugar Hill's got some great lines. Diana's killing one of the white supporter thingies. And I think it's the guy who gives her $10,000 who's like delivering her final payment from Morgan. And he says to her, I wasn't even there. I didn't even do anything. And she literally looks him in the eye and she goes, just call this a repayment for something you did and haven't been caught doing yet. And I was like,
yes.
Yes. That's, you know, we had a Scream franchise celebration in the Clubhouse chat last night. And that was a big conversation about Cotton Weary. Whereas, you know, obviously he wasn't guilty of killing Maureen, but I was adamant that Cotton was guilty of something. So I was like, maybe this is just our universe's way of saying you're not going to get caught for this thing, so you're going to at least serve some time for another thing. By the way, we have free Cotton Weary t-shirts because that was the deal in the Clubhouse room. We took a vote in the room and if it's guilty or not guilty, and the not guilties had the vote, so that means I had to put free Cotton Weary t-shirts in the shop for Afro Horror. So they're there. And again, if you use the code Clubhouse10 or Afro Horror 10, you can save 10% if you really feel like you want a free Cotton Weary t-shirt.
The look on your face. people out in podcast land, you cannot see the look on Chardet's face, but it's wonderful.
I really didn't want to do it. I was like, but I am a woman to my word. We lost by one vote that Cotton was not guilty. So then the deal was to put free Cotton Weary t-shirts up, but our next week's room is going to be Scream Queen versus Scream Queen, Sydney Prescott versus Laurie Strode. Yes.
Okay.
So we're going to have some Team Sydney and Team Laurie shirts available in the shop to prepare for that.
Nice.
Yes. Anyway, so Diana is a woman with a plan. She goes to execute your plan. She looks fabulous the whole time doing it. I mean, honestly, what I really, really love about Diana, Miss Dirty Diana, is that she goes to Morgan knowing that she's killing everyone one by one and still tries to broker this deal.
Yes, she's fearless.
She sits down across from him in this beautiful pantsuit, like abs for the gods. And she's like playing a dumb victim. I love it. She's playing up this woman role of like, I don't know anything about business. And I don't even think I want to keep the club because it's such a headache and a reminder of my lover. She's playing right into his hand. She's so smart. I love her.
Well, and she's, you know, she's not beyond using her sexuality to get him interested. And yeah, she knows exactly what she's doing.
One of the people she kills, she's at the pool hall. She goes, I've always wanted you. And he's like, you know, I thought I saw you looking at me. And she's like, yeah, my car's outside. You want to go home? And he's like, absolutely. And she kills him. Actually, that was the best scene.
Yeah.
Where it's on fire. The voodoo doll catches on fire in the middle. If he doesn't stab himself.
Yeah.
That's the best scene. Do you remember the chairs they're sitting in, Evan, in that scene? The wicker chairs?
Yes. Oh, okay. When they're facing each other?
When they're facing each other.
Yeah, across that little table with the voodoo stuff going on. Yes.
Yes. Okay, so you may not know this, but all Black people have that chair. I kid you not, that chair, that wicker chair especially, is in every Black grandma's house across the country. My grandma had it,
and I'm
probably going to have it when I get older.
You know, I keep my eyes and ears open, but I did not know that.
Yes, that wicker chair with the oval topping that's a little higher. All Black grandmas have that.
Is that the same chair from American Horror Story?
Yep.
Season 3?
Yes.
Okay.
Also, Beyonce used it in her tour, On the Run tour, where she's like holding two staffs. It's a very Black thing. I don't know the history of this chair, but when I saw it in the movie, I was like, damn, this runs deep. This chair has been like ingrained in our cultures this long. I don't know the history of the chair, but we all have it. And if you're Black and you're listening to this and you know what I'm talking about, DM comment on our Instagram and let me know that you know about this chair, because I promise you, every Black household, older generation has this chair.
That's your next merch shirt or sticker, that chair. Yeah.
Thank you. You're right. Yeah. Just for Black History Month, I am going to do that.
Right. And it can say like, sit the fuck down or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Take a seat in the Black chair. Like, take a seat, honey. Gosh, do I owe you a commission? I don't think my...
No. I mean, I always accept tips, but...
I was like, I owe you a kickback now that speaking of merch real quick, not to plug, but we have lapels, enamel pins coming in. Mm. And our first we're gonna drop them once a month. And the first one to drop is the teacup from Get Out. Although legally I can't call it the teacup from Get Out. So it's called the Hypno Teacup.
I love it.
Yeah. So if anyone's listening to this who works at Universal, it's not from Get Out. It's just a teacup with a spoon, and you can't sue me for that. It's very
certainly generic. Not.
It's called the Hypno Cup. So if you guys are looking forward to that, we're going to drop a pin every month as a nod to some famous Black horror movies. So like, if we have a bee pin coming up, you know who that's for.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
But it's just a bee. Okay. Okay, people, it's just a B. It means nothing. And we got some gold scissors coming out. You know who that's for.
Ooh.
But again, they're just gold scissors. They have nothing to do. Mm-hmm. So that's happening too. But yeah, so that chair and that scene, I love it. You're right. She's a beautiful woman. She knows she's a beautiful woman. What I actually really love about this film is that she doesn't have to show any TNA.
Right.
To exude her sexiness.
Uh-huh.
She just is. And a lot of Black exploitation films, there is a lot of Pam Grier's got a beautiful set of titties. She is no problem showing her titties, but they didn't ask Markey to do that here. And I really, I love that, because even though it's very male dominated with the writer and director and the producer, she still carries the film and like have some respect in her name. She doesn't have time to show her tits, you guys. I got white men to kill. So worry about my boobs later. And what I always love is right before she's about to kill someone, you like in front of Morgan, she's wearing her like her pressed hair, her good wig. Not I'm gonna say good wig. She's wearing a wig that's like straight and it's pressed. And she's wearing her like sensible outfits, but with a little tee, not enough that's like grotesque, but it's like a little curve. But when she's right about to kill someone, she's in her afro and her white suit.
Yes. I was hoping you would bring that up. It took me two or three watches before I realized that she has her like white people hair for when she's dealing with everyday life. And then when she's ready to kill a motherfucker, she is natural hair all the way.
Natural hair and that white pantsuit with the red accent. I was like, okay, she's not only a scream queen, she is a superhero. She is giving me like,
she is.
She's Clark Kent. She's Clark Kent. She's our superwoman. She's dressed in her garb and I'm like, she's everything. There's a scene where one of the white men are at the club looking for like whoever is killing everyone. And I can't remember she has a drink in her hand and she's just there and the silhouette is low and the light is perfect across her face. And she's like, hello. And I'm like, oh my gosh, she's so awesome. She's so cool. She's just sitting here in the dark, drinking whatever she's drinking, just saying hello to this. And she kills him. And it's brilliant. It's all brilliant. Now you had some points that you wanted to bring out. Can you read your list to me?
Oh, well, that was actually one of them. Was the way that her style changes between, you know, when she's pretending to make nice in front of the white people and when she's ready to kill.
Yep.
Also, I love that she and Langston are firmly middle class. Like, yes. She's a fashion photographer.
Yep.
You know,
everyday like girl.
Yeah. At first we don't see her in any particular career.
Right. We don't really know. I'm like, is she just just hanging out at the club or no? But you know what's really great about that too? Even between losing her fiance, setting up this like plot murder for all these men, and like doing a deal for the club, she goes to work.
Yeah. Like, that is some Wonder Woman shit right there.
Wonder Woman. Like,
yeah, talk about Diana.
Yeah, she's taking pictures. She's literally at a photo shoot. And I'm like, girl, you have so much going on. I feel so lazy compared to you. Like, how are you doing all of this at once? And like, just so calm, cool, and collected. And you're at work? Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. She is a dream. So I love that point. What's your next one?
Oh, goodness. I think that's most of it. I wanted to talk about how amazing her clothes are. I like that every villain gets killed off in a different way.
Yes.
You know,
very creatively.
And this is before the slasher boom, where, right, you know, they expected to have a different weapon or a different method for each victim. And, you know, some are very practical, some are very impractical, some are absolutely magic. I love when she feeds the one guy to the pigs. That's great.
I love, and then she gives someone money, but it's always money with you. Take this money to where you're going. I love that. She throws his $10,000 back. What I love is that she's also one of the smartest killers that I've ever seen on screen. So the Richard Lawson, the detective, is like, oh, someone's killing people and they're leaving a trail. And she catches on to it. And she's like, to the next kill, she's like, well, you're going to stab yourself, because we don't want people to think, like, we want to cut him off.
And then she has Somdi basically push him down the stairs, but she's like, but you cannot kill him.
Yeah, in my remake, we would dive more into that love triangle too, because it's like, I think Diana to me is very sexual in the sense, like, I have a mission, I have a goal, but I also want to be fucked. So she has a respect for this detective, but he can't get in her way. Like, you're not going to get in my way, but I would like to be dicked down by you at some point. So she tells her man, she's like, yeah, just like get him out of the way, but don't kill him. I plan on like getting some D after this.
Yeah. And he's a friend, you know, just get him out of the way.
And she goes to visit him and she's like, you good. And he's like, I broke my leg, but I don't feel pain. She's like, well, you should be blessed. That's blessing, baby. Anyway, I'll be back. She calls him baby. I love that. Mm-hmm, she's like, I'll be back, baby. You're like, you sit tight. And that's the last we see of the detective. In my head for the remake, the detective still pushes on and like uncovers that she is this like high priestess, and like men do, betrays her and she kills him. Cause fuck you.
Okay. Yeah. I think in my version he has that like Poirot moment from Murder on the Orient Express.
When he's like,
well, you know, a crime was committed and I just throw my hands in the air and let someone else deal with it, because I don't know who's the bad guy here.
That's nice. I like that too. I like that too. I think both versions would be really fun. I just want to see her kill more men.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just
always
like, you should just be with women.
but you bring up such a good point about her sexuality. At no point do I feel like the men in front of or behind the camera are in control of this woman's sexuality.
I agree. You know, I agree. Yes, there's no female gaze here.
Yeah, she's hot because she wants to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just how it is.
No, I agree. She's in control from the beginning of this movie of her sexuality and how people see her. She purposely wears that outfit to attract Morgan. And even his jealous racist girlfriend, Celeste, is like, what does she have? He's like, she's got color. She goes, she ain't got no color. And he goes, well, whatever it is, you need it. Like, she's so classy. She's so hot. Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, I forget the line, but it's, she's like, what, you know, who do you think I am? And Morgan's like, we all know what kind of woman you are, Celeste.
Morgan was on Celeste's neck the whole movie. And I was like, girl, he don't like you. Celeste was trying so hard to be seen by Morgan, and he's just like, oh, he's so gross. And then, you know, Diana walks in and she's polite and she's kind and she's sexy and she's sweet, and he's like, yeah, I'll give her $10,000 without a contract signed. Bad business.
Yeah.
And oh my god, let's talk about this. Celeste getting her ass kicked by Diana. I stood on my couch. I was like, kick that white bitch's ass. Yes.
And she had it coming too.
She had it coming. She did. Yeah. I wanted it to happen. I was like, beat her ass, Diana. Beat her ass.
Well, and then she basically sells her into sex slavery for Baron Samedi. Sorry, spoilers.
Well, no, but, I mean, the movie came out 47 years ago, you guys.
Yeah, you know. Like, either you seen it or you didn't.
Is it sex slavery or is it just her soul? I think it's just, he's just collecting souls.
Okay, so I'm positive it's sex slavery, and hear me out.
Oh, go on.
At the beginning, Baron's like, well, what will you give me if I give you the power of revenge? And she's like, I will give you my soul. And Baron just laughs at her. He's like, I don't need souls, I need bodies. So Baron, like, I'm 100% sure that his fee for killing all these men is that he wants a booty girl.
Ain't that some shit? Even in the afterlife, men only want ass. Like, Diana is on a mission to avenge her lover, and you're like, so am I gonna get some ass out of this?
I mean, also the voodoo gods are very human. You know, they drink, they smoke, they're
so mad. Oh my god. And then so at the end of the movie, you guys, like, Diana's can meet her accomplice, and Baron looks at her and he's like, so what about our deal? And she's like, oh, I got an idea. Her, Celeste. It's Celeste in a hot green suit and some white go-go boots. And he's like, you know, I would have said no to this, but because technically this isn't the deal we made, but I'm going to go. Oh, okay. He was so happy to get that white girl.
He was.
So happy to get that white girl. There's something to be said about that on a different day. That's horrible, Diana. Like, I can't cheer for that, but also, oh my God, girl.
I get a weird feeling, you know, as someone who was raised male and, you know, gets all the male privileges. When I see that happen to a woman on screen, I'm like, oh, she didn't deserve that. Like, yeah, no one ever deserves to be raped.
Yeah.
Unless perhaps they're a rapist. But I was okay with her being.
Well, now exchange. That you put it in that lens, I'm like, I was okay with her soul being taken. I don't want her to. She's a horrible racist. She's horribly racist to Diana this entire film. So yes, she deserves to go to hell for all eternity. But I mean, look, that's none of my business how the devil runs his area. It's none of my business how you do your job down there, sir. So let me stay out of it, because I don't plan on seeing you.
Right, that's outside my pay grade.
Outside of my pay, it's above me now. Below me now. Below me now. But Celeste could suck a dick. Oh, never mind. No, we're not gonna go there. But yeah, so
changing the subject. Changing it right now.
I will put a trigger warning before this, because I don't want anyone to think that we are making light of sexual assault. We are not. We are just talking about Celeste's ending of this story. So we're certainly not, but we will put a trigger warning out, because we, you know, that did not expect that to come out. Okay. So let's see. There's any other moments I want to touch on before we wrap this part up? I don't think so. So overall, we're going to do this new thing where we give these movies a rating. And we're going to call it out of 5 afros.
Okay.
Okay. So how many afros out of afros are you giving Sugar Hill 1974?
I'm giving it 4.5 afros.
It's a good rating. I'm going to give it a solid 4 afros out of 5. I'm only giving it, it's only 1 point down for me because, oh, well, first of all, this song is amazing.
Voodoo Woman.
Yes. As soon as it played in the opening credits, I was like, oh, this is a hit. I was like, Jordan Peele, remake Voodoo Woman and make it creepy and slow like you do all the time. do it that way. Yeah, so the movie only gets 1 point deducted for me because I still just wanted more men to die. What about you?
You know, I would, that last half a point, you know, like that's reserved for perfection. And I feel like with a better budget and culturally appropriate writers and directors, it would have been a 5 for me. But as it is, well, and this is something else that I did want to bring up is that, you know, I had seen screenshots of Sugar Hill and stuff like that for years. And I've been a horror fan my entire life, and I've been studying it academically for a good 15 years. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, you know, the zombies, they look so hokey. Why do they have fish eyes?
Yeah.
And I was like, eh, maybe I'll skip it. And then I just was like, you know what? The blaxploitation area of horror, I'm very underinformed in. So I was like, let's watch Sugar Hill. And I watched it and I'm like, this is fucking amazing.
Yeah.
And I needed to like send a message through the ether to past Evan to inform him how much he's going to love Sugar Hill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Same with me. I think I avoided it for too long and I've always heard about it, at least for black horror. And then I finally watched it and I was like, this is everything I want from a movie. It has fashion, it has great lines, it has murder, and it has a badass. Why was I avoiding this movie for so long? And why aren't we remaking it?
Yeah, you've even got the one black character, Fabulous.
Yes.
Which,
yep.
You know, is such a great name for the era.
Yep.
But, you know, the fact that Fabulous is... Okay, as a white person, it's you know, a tightrope for me to articulate this, but Fabulous does not give a fuck who he kills for this white mobster.
He doesn't. He just cares about money.
Yeah, and it's nice to have that foil for Sugar.
Yeah,
and to see like, oh yeah, you know, no, there are black people in this gang, and they're gonna get the bullet too.
And it's, I mean, if I'm looking at it, it's also a code for how we uphold white supremacy.
Yeah.
Even when you're not white, well, you can uphold white supremacy, and you can benefit from it. And
absolutely.
A lot of people, and this is going to be controversial, you guys, and you're going to yell at me, and I don't give a fuck. A lot of black men benefit from white supremacy because they're men and they're straight. I'm going to take that back. Black straight men benefit from white supremacy because they're men, number one. And they're straight, number two. Okay? So that's why they feel entitled to be homophobic and misogynist. And that still upholds white supremacy. So when we have instances where people aren't believing women when they say they've been abused, or you're coming down on your fellow man because they are gay, you're holding up white supremacy. So I'm just putting it out there for the Kanyes of the world. You can write me, you can tweet me, you can do whatever you want. Just because you're black doesn't mean you're not a part of this system.
Thank you.
Okay. Yes, of course. So we each gave our ratings on Sugar Hill. Do you have any final words for this amazing film that you'd like to leave the people with?
If you're on the fence about it and you've never seen it, go see it. It's so worth it. It is just a super satisfying horror movie.
It is. And it keeps you engaged. Like,
yeah.
Every scene you're like, this is great. It's moving the story along. It's not, there's nothing in here that's just for filler. And it's a quick watch. It's an hour and a half. It's not like it's 2 hours. Like it's a pretty solid watch. So, and again, the opening scene is brilliant with the music. Like, all right. So, Evan, tell the people, I mean, are you online? Where can they find you again? Like remind everyone where they can find you if they want to tweet you.
It would be my pleasure. So my online nerve center is evanjpeterson.com, J like the letter. And that, you know, usually on my homepage, I throw down whatever whatever online workshops I've got coming up, where you can read the latest stuff I've published. So I do have some classes coming up, usually 2 per month on weekends, and they're usually like a 2-hour class. So if you're into writing or world creation and storytelling, check them out.
Awesome. And then us, you guys, you can always follow us on Afro Horror Pod. That's on Instagram and Twitter. We are on Clubhouse. Are you on Clubhouse, Evan?
I'm not.
Do you have an iPhone?
I do.
Okay, I'm gonna send you the invite.
Do it. Okay. Yeah, I have House Party and WhatsApp and Discord and Twitch and all that shit.
Oh, yeah, so I know.
One more is not gonna kill me.
One more. Well, we do our franchise chats every Saturday at 5:30 p.m. PST. So okay. Next week is Scream Queen versus Scream Queen, Sydney Prescott versus Laurie Strode. And we're treating it like a court case. So I'm representing Sydney and there's another person representing Laurie. We have a judge and we have jury and we have a whole to present our case about the Scream Queen that we think will reign. So you have to join us for that. But I would love to also like host a room with you about horror writing techniques. A lot of people ask me questions about that. Like, can you give some tips? Cool.
I would love to.
Great. Yeah, we'll set that up.
Yeah, I'll even do it for free.
So, oh, great.
Yeah, trying to give free things to people of color when I can.
Yeah, and maybe we could do a special discount so if people from that, from Clubhouse want to take your class, they could get like a little discount.
Sure.
Like a special code, we'll work
absolutely.
On it.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Black History Month. So we're on Instagram, we're on Twitter, obviously guys, and we're on Facebook. The shop is open. I worked really hard on the shop and it's going to change. Like every week there'll be a new item and some items won't stay up there. We've got Armitage University sweatshirts. If you know Armitage, that's from Get Out. We've got teacups and we got mugs. We've got obviously Free Cotton Weary t-shirts that won't be there much longer. We've got lapel pins coming in. So we've got a really some beanies. The Afro Horror beanies are the best. They're really, I tried to wear mine for you today, Evan, but I buried it somewhere in my office, but they're really, really soft. And actually don't forget, email me your address because we always send our guests a little gift after they guess.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
But yeah, the shop is open, you guys. I try to make everything so affordable for you. So check it out. That's the best way to support us. But also we are launching our Patreon today. We have $5 and $10 tiers, and Evan's going to join us on the Patreon. We're going to talk about something a little different. Oh, wait, what were your two films?
So two of the best films I've seen recently were The Blood on Satan's Claw, which is on Shudder right now, and then A Dark Song, which is a little more difficult to find, but damn, like talk about some like abuse narratives and gender in horror.
I haven't seen either of those yet.
Okay. Well,
what should we talk about that we've seen together?
do you want to talk about Ganja and Hess as like a primer for next month?
No, because that guest is already shot. What? Let's see. Scream 5 is coming out. Do you like any Scream movies?
Yeah, it's not really my franchise.
Not your favorite franchise? What's your franchise?
So I'm really into monsters.
Okay.
So I love the Alien movies. I love the Hellraiser movies.
Okay.
Anything that's a take on Frankenstein, anything that's got witches in it.
Let's talk aliens. We can go.
Let's talk about Alien.
Prometheus and Covenant included, yeah?
Yeah, sure.
All right. Yeah. So we settled on it because I can't wait to have this conversation with you. I love aliens. We're going to be talking about the Alien franchise on the Patreon episode, which is perfect because we will have an Alien franchise celebration room on Clubhouse later in the month. So this will be our precursor before we do that
Clubhouse. I love Alien so much that I watch all the awful low budget knockoffs of Alien. Like that's how much I love it.
I have a story for you that we're going to save for the Patreon, but just so you guys know, also, I was the guest host on Alien 3's episode at Horror Queers. You know Horror Queers, Evan?
Yes. Is that, is that?
Trace and Joe?
I don't know Trace and Joe, but I know of Horror Queers.
Okay,
so
yes.
I need to hit them up and talk to them.
No, I'll introduce you. They're wonderful.
Thank you.
They're wonderful.
Thank you.
So I was their guest host for their month of threes. They were doing movies that the third movie in the trilogy. Thank you.
Okay.
So that was last month, and I did Alien 3, and we had such a fun time. And we're gonna get there when we talk to the Patreon. So join us at the Patreon, you guys. We're gonna be talking the Alien franchise. But Evan, it's been so great to have you on the episode. This is really awesome.
thank you so much for having me. I am eternally grateful.
Yay! And you guys, will see you next month. Next month, what comes after February? Evan, help me out. What's the month?
Is it March? But we may have changed that in the pandemic. I think it's March.
1 year COVID next month. Are you working from home currently, or do you still have to go out? Okay,
I'm blessed that I freelance and same. Yeah, I have my day job with Clarion West, so I get to work entirely remotely.
Same.
And yeah. And mad respect to the frontline folks, you know, in food service and grocery stores as well as in the hospitals.
Yeah. Thank you everyone who delivers my groceries and works in the grocery stores or hospitals or any place that you have to be it's not safe for you to be, but you have to be there because you need to provide for me and your own families. Thank you so, so much. So next month is March and we are talking us for that month.
Yeah.
So this will be, yeah, we already taped that episode and it's really, really fun. Like we had a good time taping that episode. So you'll check out our us episode for the month of March, but just so you guys know, we only drop one episode a month, but it's Black History Month. So we will be dropping an episode a week during Black History Month, but on the Patreon. We won't be doing it here.
Smart. So,
I'm a Diana businesswoman.
There you go.
So subscribe to the Patreon so you can get our exclusive episodes for the entire month for Black History Month, and then the next full episode will be in March for us. But that signs us out of Afro Horror for the month of February. Happy Black History Month, everyone. I'm super excited to be doing this with you and to celebrate Black artists in front and behind the camera every month on Afro Horror. Like and subscribe. This isn't YouTube. Just leave us a friendly comment. It really, really helps if you can. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to this episode of Afro Horror. Please subscribe and leave a comment if you'd like what you heard. We want to send a special shout out to Jaren Hemphill for our amazing logo design. Thanks, Jaren. You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Afro Horror or on our website, www.afrohorror.com. No copyright infringement was intended while recording this podcast.